Once again, welcome to another segment of Reclaiming History with Livonia Mallory. This is part two of my interview with Clyde W. Ford.
He is the author of Think Black. In 1947, Thomas J. Watson set out to find the best and brightest minds for IBM. At the City College, he met a young accountant student named John Stanley Ford, and hired him to become the company's first Black software engineer. While Watson may have been ready for change, many of IBM's white employees were not. They did everything in their power to humiliate, subvert, and undermine Ford, hoping to see him fail and get fired. His son, Clyde W. Ford, has written a thought-provoking and heartbreaking new book entitled Think Black, a memoir. Mr. Clyde W. Ford reveals how he came to appreciate his father and the sacrifices his father made as a hidden figure in the history of computers to advance Blacks in high technology.
So Clyde, I'm so happy to have you back on the show. Last time we talked about your father, and now I want to spend a little bit more time talking about IBM's involvement with the Nazis.
Livonia, thank you for inviting me.
So Clyde, you know, in the book you talk about the racism that your father had to endure while he was at IBM. And Thomas J. Watson, the founder of IBM, he recruited your father to come into this, you know, what we would call today a hostile work environment. What was the motivation for them bringing in your father when the white colleagues and the IBM culture wasn't really open to having African-Americans in the workforce?
Yes, thanks for asking that question, Livonia. That is probably the central question of the book. And I have to say that when I was beginning to write this book, I thought I was telling pretty much a Jackie Robinson Branch Rickey story. My dad is the first person in the modern computer era hired by IBM, hired directly by Thomas Watson, who's kind of like Branch Rickey, Thomas Watson, the president and founder of IBM. What were his motivations? This is what I think readers really wanted to know. I was really blown away to discover what I think are the real reasons why my dad was hired into IBM. And it had not so much to do with a altruistic social justice belief by the founder, Thomas Watson, that he wanted to do something in terms of bringing Black folks into high tech, into IBM. It had a lot more to do with hiding IBM's past, diverting attention toward in one direction so you don't look in the other direction. I mean, we see that all the time politically now. You know, you start a war in order to divert attention away from impeachment. There's all sorts of things that there are some similarities politically, but Watson was a master at this. An absolute master. What I discovered is that IBM had a deep history of involvement in eugenics, and that's the movement that really attempted in the 1920s to produce a pure racial stock, kind of a Nordic ideal, which they would produce and breed people, very similar to what happened in Nazi Germany, and try to eliminate or cull or remove Blacks, Native Americans, Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans from the so-called bloodline so they would be breeded out of existence. And there's just some horrible things that eugenicists did, but IBM was deeply involved in that. IBM was deeply involved in Nazi Germany and the Holocaust, supplying all of the automation and all of the technology used by Hitler in his program to exterminate the Jews. IBM was also deeply involved in apartheid and supplying the apartheid regime in South Africa with the tools and technologies to help discriminate who was and who wasn't Black, who deserved and who didn't deserve to live in the Black ghettos that they established, the camps, the reservations. IBM also then, and again, I'm proceeding with the story beyond the time that my dad worked at IBM, IBM continued even into this modern era of being very deeply involved in facial recognition and the ability of facial recognition technology to discriminate based on skin color. I had no clue of this history, and I had no clue the extent to which IBM was so deeply involved in this use of technology to really subvert the best of human rights, the best of civil rights, to really subvert the notions of diversity and inclusion. It's a very different story than the story that IBM tells on its websites, in its talks, in its presentations, in its advertisements. But it's a story that has incredible documentation. And it's a story that I realized once I stumbled onto it, it's a story that had to be told.
For my listeners, tell them a little bit more about how IBM used their machines. What were they doing with their machines that was useful to the Nazis?
Yes, so to really tell that story, and it's very quick, let me go back to how IBM used technology to support eugenics. So the eugenics project in 1928 was involved in a study on the island of Jamaica to identify mixed-race individuals for forced sterilization. You wanted to identify people who had some African genetic lineage, and those are the people you wanted to make sure did not continue to have children. This is horrible, but this really happened. Now, in order to do that, you had to do a very extensive census count of people, which meant you had to collect data on millions of people who lived on the island of Jamaica. In 1928, there was no way to maintain that data, sort that data, print that data, do statistics on that data, until IBM, in the form of Thomas Watson, went to Charles Davenport, head of the Eugenics Records Office on Cold Springs Island, New York, on Long Island, and said, look, I've got a way for you to do this. We can collect all the data you need. We can store that data. We can sort that data. We can tabulate that data. And we can print out that data. We have machines that can do that. They took, meaning IBM took, the exact same format for the punch cards used in the Jamaica study, and in 1933, went to Nazi Germany and said to Adolf Hitler, hey, you need to figure out who is and who isn't Jewish. And there's a lot of data there. There's like millions and millions of people you're going to have to collect data on. You don't have the ability to do that by hand. But guess what? We have the ability to do that with our machines. We will help you. We will train you. We will allow you to lease from us. IBM never sold machines. They always kept control. And we will help you figure out how to create the kinds of systems you need to do what you need to do. So let's just take the example of what they did with those machines. Using punch card equipment, IBM then, first of all, helped the Germans complete their census. This is the census, I believe, in 1935. That was the census which was the basis for determining who was and who was not Jewish. Then, you know, people always ask, how does a Nazi officer ride in the back of one of those cars, go into a small town in Germany, stand up and say, I want this person, then this person, and this person to show up now? And, yeah, how do they know that? Well, that Nazi officer was carrying a printed list of who was and who was not Jewish that was compiled on IBM equipment and printed on IBM printers. That's how they knew. But it was beyond that. IBM helped automate the train schedules that allowed German officers to herd Jews onto trains loaded for concentration camps. For example, many people have seen in concentration camps the numbers tattooed on the forearms of prisoners.
Yes.
Those numbers were connected to a set of punch cards that were maintained at the concentration camp in a special room that was called the IBM room, because that's where the IBM equipment was. Those IBM punch cards had every aspect of that person's life, including the gruesome details of how they would be exterminated. Firing squad, work to death, gas chambers, ovens. That was on an IBM punch card. There was a special column for that. And that's how IBM used, or I should say the Germans, with IBM's help and foreknowledge, used the equipment in order to help the Nazis in their program to exterminate the Jews. It was IBM equipment that helped the Nazis automate the bombing runs. It was IBM equipment that helped them determine every aspect of how they would automate their war effort. When Britain entered the war, but America had yet to enter the war, Thomas Watson went to Adolf Hitler and said, look, I need to build some bomb shelters in order to protect the equipment that we have working for you. And of course, you know, Hitler helped him do that and paid for that. And when America entered the war, Watson went to Roosevelt and said, you know what, I really want to set up some factories, munitions factories, to build the bombs that will bomb Nazi Germany. So here's somebody who's the quintessential war profiteer. You build the shelters and you build the bombs to destroy the shelters, and you get paid from both ends. Anyone can go on the internet and there's a picture, 1937 picture, of Hitler pinning a medal on Thomas J. Watson for his help. Actually created a special medal that he pinned on him for his help in helping the Third Reich pursue its goals.
Oh my goodness, Clyde, we are out of time. To my listeners, tune in next time for my continuing conversation with Clyde W. Ford, author of Think Black, a memoir, available at all book outlets. Clyde, thank you.
Thank you, Lavonia. I really appreciated this opportunity to spend some time with you and your listeners as well.